What a treasure trove of unique documents, especially from the 1940s, 50s and 60s, rare publications, magazines, correspondence, photos, etc., and of course all the magazines and publications published by BRSF, including Riley Crabb's 1950s newsletter from his Aquail research group in Hawaii. I had also hoped to find correspondence from Milan Cook and Paul M. Vest, but so far no luck. But I did find some of the correspondence between Desmond Leslie and Mead Lane from 1952, 1955, discussing George Adamski and the publication of Flying Saucers Have Landed. Rare and unique documents indeed. In his letters, Desmond Leslie proves to be a very erudite esotericist, also mentioning that he has been helped to write by certain entities in the other world who have told they are doing the best to guide my pen. Letter November 13, 1952. We all know the result, the book that was dynamite, quoting Flying Saucer Review editor Charles Bowen. Leslie first suggested the title Saucers and Sorcery for his book. But with the George Adamski contact of 1952 included, he changed the title to the definitely more inspiring Flying Saucers Have Landed. Of letter from Desmond Leslie to Mead Lane. Lane became acquainted with the unique and fascinating deep, trance medium Mark Probert. The information channeled by mediums is generally a bore to read, platitudes coupled with naive love, and light mysticism, but the Mark Probert communications are different, of a definitely higher intellectual and cultural quality, with interesting discussions of science, philosophy and esotericism. Mead Lane and his associates worked for many years with Mark Probert, and the results were published in Seance Memoranda. Esotericist Riley Crabb, who directed BSRF between 1959-1985, referred to the 16 men and women speaking through Probert as the Inner Circle, the invisible powerhouse behind BSRF. The Inner Circle present themselves with names such as Ramon Natley, Drive Charles Lingford, Yardad Ishiite, Lo Sunyat, etc. Could these names be personas, fictional characters used by members of some of the secret lodges on Earth? If this theory proves correct, my guess would be the Yucatan Brotherhood mentioned by Charles Leadbeater, Annie Besant, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. This secret lodge created the first physical materialization phenomena that inspired the formation of the spiritualist movement in the 19th century. Academic scholar Dr. Jocelyn Godwin has written several interesting articles seriously discussing this the hidden hand theory. With the donation of the BSRF archive, most of the seance memoranda are now of a FOO and catalogued by Anders Liljegren. Anders Liljegren cataloguing seance memoranda at a FOO. I corresponded with Riley Crabb 1979-1985 and was really glad to find many articles, photos and correspondence in the BSRF archive, going back to his years on Hawaii. For 3 years, Crabb was president of the Honolulu Lodge of the Theosophical Society and also a well-known lecturer on UFOs. In 1957 he, together with his wife Judy, moved to the U.S. and in 1959 he entered the directorship of BSRF as Mead Lane retired. Riley Crabb was very much concerned with the problem of relating UFO data to the esoteric tradition. Somewhat surprisingly, this interest was not always met with enthusiasm by active theosophists and other esotericists. In a revealing letter to Gordon Creighton, August 5, 1990, Riley laments the conservatism and lack of UFO interest among these groups. "It is now obvious to me that one of my major reasons for being here in NZ is to try to awaken the leaders of the theosophical lodges to the realities of other inhabited planets and of advanced beings from them," quoting their own earliest literature. Phyllis is an amorcrosic Russian but got snubbed when she tried to open the San Jose, California leaders to the reality of UFOs materializing from the fourth dimension, and when I quoted the early literature on space travel to Joy Mills, one of the leading American theosophists at Crotona, Ojai, California, she replied that the references were allegorical, ha. She also quoted Jung on UFOs in his book, that the spacecraft were images in the race mind. The larger of the BSRF archive consists of folders, alphabetically arranged according to subject or persons. In each folder can be found clippings, photos, correspondence or booklets. But there are also large piles of unsorted papers which will take months to assort. There are probably many gems hidden in these piles. The archive we have received at Afu is not complete. Of the collections have probably been retrieved by former leaders or active members. But we are very glad that this unique archive has been preserved and is now in the custody of Afu, open to all serious investigators worldwide. Through the curtain. Dr. Shafika Karagula, 1914-1986, was a well-known psychiatrist and medical doctor with a vast research background in many countries. Early in her professional career, she had made an in-depth study of hallucinations reported by patients with temporal lobe epilepsy. In the introduction to the remarkable book Through the Curtain, she writes that the research had led me to believe that all of man's experiences were limited to the physical brain and the five senses. Karagula had since 1930 been a close friend of Viola Pattit-Neal, poet, writer and student of the esoteric tradition. Neal had obtained a doctorate of philosophy, PhD, from London University, writing a thesis on the secret religions of the Middle East. In 1956, Viola Pattit-Neal challenged the skeptical Shafika Karagula to read books by Helena P. Blavatsky, Alice Bailey and Edgar Cayce, but how was one to classify such experiences, for they were not included in my training. Comments Karagula. Neal further revealed to her friend that she had for many years been in contact with one of the adepts, masters, or planetary guardians, spiritual hierarchy, of our planet. Neal regularly attended what she called night classes by various adepts. Karagula is stunned by this confidential disclosure and, as a researcher of the human mind, asks for some verification of Neal's experiences. As a test, Karagula is allowed to question Neal during sleep when she is attending night classes and also to tape record the sessions. The following morning, I will try to see if she could recall the class which I had taped the night before. To my utter amazement, she was able to recall the lecture which she had attended while asleep, almost verbatim, as the tape confirmed. This research and documentation went on secretly for 20 years and the result was published in Through the Curtain, published in 1983. After the death of Viola Pattit-Neal in 1981, Shafika Karagula was permitted to reveal the secret life of her friend. A Swedish edition of Through the Curtain, Natal Exena, was published in 1992 by esotericist Lars Adelskog. Information on night classes was given by the Tibetan adept D.K. in the first volume published by Alice Bailey, Initiation Human and Solar, 1922. Classes are held by initiates of the first and second degrees for accepted disciples and those on probation, between the hours of 10 and 5 every night in all parts of the world. They gather in the Hall of Learning and the method is much the same as in the big universities: classes at certain hours, experimental work, examinations, and a gradual moving up and onward as the tests are passed. 64, 65. Disciples are taught in groups in the master's ashram, or classroom, at night, if in incarnation. P. 69. The night classes published in Through the Curtain were recorded between 1960, 1980. The lessons cover a wide range of subjects but are divided into 10 main headings such as extrasensory perception, science, education in the future, crystals, planetary types. The teaching presented is generally in accordance with information published by Helena Blavatsky, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. But there is some new and controversial data on extraterrestrial visitors that I have not found in other esoteric sources. On May 11, 1962, Viola Pattit-Neal is informed in a night class that very definitely, there are space people who come and go on your planet. Some of these are very constructive, as those from Mars and Venus. Some are destructive. P. 280. In several chapters, details are given about a group of evil and destructive space people originating from Pluto, during the fifth sub-race, Atlantis, HB. Plutonians came en masse and invaded the planet Earth. P. 235, the Plutonian invasion was both by a type of spaceship and by simply incarnating in this human life wave on the planet, p. 242. The planet Pluto, the invader planet, 8th sphere, within our solar system, constitutes an integrated and hard core of evil, p. 231. Plutonians came to the planet Earth to invade and exploit and take over. p.233. To my knowledge, this detailed information about Pluto and Plutonians has never been mentioned in any of the classic books on esotericism. The Tibetan DK only says that the destructive power of the first ray, focused in Pluto, brings change, darkness and death. Bailey, Esoteric Astrology, 187. In UFO contactee literature we find a few references to Pluto. In My Contact with Flying Saucers, the controversial Brazilian contactee Dino Crasbedon, alias Dino Felix, is told regarding space people from Pluto that they are dangerous beings, and any instances of saucers doing harm to people on Earth can be attributed to them. 191. Riley Grab, Director of Borderland Sciences Research Foundation, BSRF, 1959-1985, often in his comments on various contactee issues referred to the Men in Black, Plutoids from the Mafia of the Solar System. The Journal of Borderland Research, Volume 27, Number 3, May-June 1971 p. 5. Aficionados of the supernatural in horror fiction may also have noticed that H.P. Lovecraft, in his novel The Whisperer in Darkness, published in 1931, mentioned non-human extraterrestrial invaders from Pluto, called Yuggoth by Lovecraft. If we accept this information, the contact claims of Kelvin Rowe become dubious. As I noted in my former blog entry, Rowe said one of his space contacts came from Pluto. If you are an esotericist, the only way to deal with conflicting statements like these is to use discrimination and an open mind. As UFO investigator, the interesting if true attitude is the best. There is some very interesting information about Shafika Karagula in Ingo Swann's autobiography Remote Viewing. The Real Story. An autobiographical memoir, 1996. Karagula became sort of a spiritual mentor to Swann, as described in Chapter 40. You see, Shafire was to become one of my three major advisors regarding international affairs of the type that never get mentioned in the media, science, academe, or mentioned even by conspiracy enthusiasts. She also knew about how almost all of the world's intelligence agencies operated, those agencies known to exist, and those which exist but are not known or even admitted to by anyone and don't even have names. Karagula's knowledge and advice was certainly welcome to Swann, as he in 1975-1977 became involved with a secret intelligence organization described as the Axelrod Incident. The story of how Swann helped this group with remote viewing is told in his book Penetration. The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy, 1998. Mr. Axelrod confirmed to Swann that his organization was aware of and were trying to deal with extraterrestrial intruders in their own way. "Well, I guess you guys, whoever you are, have a problem, and from all I can tell, Earth is under some kind of siege. UFOs appear everywhere, are seen by thousands. Yet they are elusive, but of concern, so you are trying to fit the pieces together. And I would suppose too, that you are desperate. Enough at least to try to employ psychics to help you out. You see," Axel laughed, "I don't have to tell you anything, do I?" Ingo Swann had, together with two intelligence operatives, observed a very unusual woman in a Hollywood supermarket. His psychic sensitivity indicated that this woman was an ET and dangerous. At a dinner later with Shafika Karagula and Viola Pettit-Neal, the discussion entered the problem of ET groups infiltrating Earth. Without Swann mentioning the Axelrod incident, he got these comments: "Viola, there are a lot of them, you know, and many are bio-androids. Shafika, they're dangerous, you know, and they realized that Earth psychics are their only enemies. Be careful, Ingo, be careful. This information can be compared with what John Keel wrote in a confidential letter to Jim and Coral Lawrence on July 18, 1967. It was during this time Keel became involved with and personally encountered the men in black. "The people I am concerned with are androids. Manufactured entities controlled by a distant and unknown master. They are not composed of living cells as we are, and do not grow old. Mibra represent a very large terrestrial group who are allied with a very hostile UFO group. There are people in government who know about these things. I have their names and know what is going on. This is not a scientific or military problem. There is no need for the public to know everything. I do have some sympathy for the scientific, mainstream ufologists who shun away from this kind of research and data and year after year struggle on with ordinary UFO observations. Playing on the safe side, so to speak. But my 40-plus years involvement with the UFO enigma has made me aware of that you must dare to knock on some doors usually not even recognized by mainstream scientists and academics. That's why I admire heretic and iconoclastic investigators like Jack Valli, John Keel, Riley Crabb or Ingo Swann, to name a few. Entering the mirror world of intelligence organizations, conspiracies and esotericism is not for everyone. And once there you may wish to go back to the safe world of everyday reality. In this respect I am reminded of a fascinating quote from Norman Mailer's famous novel An American Dream. "I decided the only explanation is that God and the devil are very attentive to the people at the summit. I don't know if they stir much in the average man's daily stew, no great sport for spooks, I would suppose. There's nothing but magic at the top. It's the little secret a few of us keep to ourselves, but that, my friend, is one reason it's not very easy to get to the very top. Because you have to be ready to deal with one or the other, and that's too much for the average good man on his way. Sooner or later, he decides to be mediocre, and put up with the middle." An American Dream, The Dial Press, New York 1965, p. 246. Planetary and Interplanetary Guardians. Before continuing with the theme of this blog, I find it necessary to inform all readers of the recent sad course of events. In my latest blog entry, I presented some facts regarding the alarming situation in Swedish society, adding a few political comments. As my views were not politically correct, I naturally expected some criticism and a few raised eyebrows. What I didn't expect though was the total rejection and lack of tolerance for different political opinions by my old UFO colleague and friend Klaus Svahn. On his blog, Klaus referred to me, not mentioning my name, as the ugly snout of extremism. Extremismen's Fulletrine. A rather peculiar comment, as I have spent a large of my life on the barricades fighting both religious and political extremism, left, wing as well as right, wing. Unfortunately, my old friend and UFO colleague, like so many in our society, have forgotten the words, whether a true quote or not, of that old heretic and non-conformist Voltaire: "I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." With this attitude by my UFO colleague, trust and continued participation as a board member of a FU and UFO, Sweden would be impossible. My only option was to leave the board of both organizations. A bitter pill to swallow, as I became a member of UFO Sweden in 1970 and was one of the founders of AFU in 1973. But I guess this is the fate of the culture radical and heretic. I have never, and will never be, a yes man. I still adhere to the motto of my old mentor Riley Crabb: if I have one goal in life, it is an uncompromising search for truth, whatever that might be, and wherever it may lead. My hope is that given time, this clash of opinions will come to an end and more normal working relationships can be resumed. But let's leave this sad state of affairs to history and continue with a more constructive and inspiring theme: the possibility, or theory, of planetary and interplanetary guardians. In a recent email from the New Zealand ufologist Brian Dixon, he mentioned the most interesting observation. "In 2000, I spoke to a Probus group for retired business people in Bankstown, Sydney, while involved with U4NSW, about UFOs. I had referred to Foo fighters during World War II, but had not mentioned the Middle East at all. Afterwards I was approached by a 65-plus-year-old gentleman who told me he had been in the 6-day war as the commander of a squadron of 6 Israeli tanks speeding across the Sinai Desert towards the Suez Canal. He said that they were always aware of these unusual, very bright, star-like objects that hovered all around, a few degrees above the horizon through their entire campaign. We knew they weren't ours, or Arabic, or Russian, or American. No, one knew whose they were, but they were always there, watching, and they were visible on radar. They never got involved, or made any contact with us, or retaliated in any way, they just watched. They were seen in all our battle zones throughout the Middle East. Email from Brian Dixon, February 14, 2017. This information corresponds very well with the findings of American ufologist Robert Hastings, who have for many years documented UFO activity at American nuclear weapons sites. Hastings has interviewed more than 150 military veterans involved in UFO incidents at various U.S. missile sites. Much of this information presented in his book, published in 2008, UFOs and Nukes: Extraordinary Encounters at Nuclear Weapons Sites. After many years of research, Hastings have arrived at these rather astounding conclusions. After researching the UFO phenomenon for 39 years, I must conclude that the technology involved is so advanced that a human origin for it can be automatically ruled out in almost every bona fide sighting case. In my view, the essential message conveyed by our visitors is this: as long as nuclear weapons exist, they remain a potential threat to the future of mankind and to the planet itself. Get rid of them. To make their point, those aboard the UFOs periodically monitor and sometimes interfere with the operational readiness of the missiles. Interview on Robert Hastings' website. Anyone with basic knowledge of UFO history will notice that this is almost exactly the message given to the first generation UFO contactees of the 1950s, but this time concluded from empirical evidence. Extraterrestrial visitors arrived as guardians to our planet because of the danger of nuclear war and total destruction of our planet. This was the message of George Van Tassel, Orfeo Angelassi, George Adamski, Daniel Fry, Howard Mengray. One of the early UFO books was named The Coming of the Guardians, written by BS Air Raid Director Mead Lane. This message was delivered to George Van Tassel on July 18, 1952. Your materialists will disagree with our attempt to warn mankind. Rest assured they shall cease to explode life-giving atoms, or we shall eliminate all projects connected with such. Our missions are peaceful, but this condition occurred before in this solar system and the planet Lucifer was torn to bits. We are determined that it shall not happen again. The governments of the planet Shan have conceded that we are of a higher intelligence. They must concede also that we are of a higher authority. In the first volume of his diaries, Forbidden Science, Journals 1957-1969, Jacques Vallée discussed the theory of planetary guardians. Has the future spiritual state of man already been achieved by some individuals? Have certain gifted men already achieved contact, on some plane, with those who may be guiding our psychic evolution? As a student of Hermeticism, Vallée was certainly aware of that this theory is a basic fact in the esoteric tradition. Mankind at its present level is only a step in the evolution of consciousness. There is a fifth kingdom in nature which we will slowly become aware of during the next centuries. Some representatives of this kingdom are living on our planet, bound together in an secret organization, sometimes called the planetary hierarchy, and which I have referred to as the Higher Intelligence Agency, here. According to esoteric history, this organization decided, during a conclave in 1775, that knowledge of their existence on this planet should be made public, beginning in 1875 with the founding of the Theosophical Society in New York. The decision was not unanimous but regarded as a test to observe how humanity would react to such a new and revolutionary fact. The Adept M. explained the problem of this disclosure to his correspondent, journalist Alfred Percy Sinnott. We do not wish Mr. Hume or you to prove conclusively to the public that we really exist. Please realize the fact that so long as men doubt, there will be curiosity and inquiry, and that inquiry stimulates reflection which begets effort. But let our secret be once thoroughly vulgarized, and not only will skeptical society derive no great good, but our privacy would be constantly endangered and have to be continually guarded at an unreasonable cost of power. During the Second World War, the forces of destruction were so close to get the upper hand that the planetary guardians asked for assistance from the interplanetary guardians. And this assistance came in large numbers. What happened behind the scenes and details of the struggle is told in The Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey, April 1935. The regenerative forces of those extraplanetary beings who offer their help at this time. April, May 1940. Hovering today within the aura of our planet are certain great spiritual forces and entities, awaiting the opportunity to participate actively in the work of world redemption, readjustment and reconstruction. The waiting extra planetary forces. p. 222-223, April 1943, certain great energies of extra planetary significance who stand ready to intervene. That there was cooperation between the planetary and interplanetary guardians was confirmed by that extraordinary organization Borderland Sciences Research Association, BSRA, in 1951. Their motto at the time is interesting, serving higher intelligence since 1945. Here is a quote from a seance memoranda from the Inner Circle, November 28, 1951. There is a certain secret work going on at present between the Aetherians and certain high Earth authorities. You understand, I suppose, that I do not use the word high in the usual sense. I am referring to those belonging to some of the secret lodges on Earth. This work has to do with the great possibility of the Earth's destruction. These men have landed in Australia in a secret landing field. They have not only been to Scotland, but to high authorities in England, and to a few of your men and women here of high standing. I refer to the secret orders. Information about cooperation between the planetary and interplanetary guardians was also given to some of the first generation UFO contactees. The spacecraft that are appearing today are under the direction of the hierarchy of their own planets and are working in close harmony with the masters and mystery schools of the hierarchy on Earth. Thus we see that there is a definite connection between the mystery schools and the UFO. They are really one and the same force in operation. The UFO are in our skies, and we are talking with space me who tell us the same thing that the mentors of this planet have been telling us for many centuries. George Hunt Williamson and John McCoy, UFOs Confidential, p. 70. Because of the critical situation for our planet, the interplanetary guardians, INCO, operation with the planetary guardians, made a psychological experiment and information effort in the 1950s, to make the general public aware of their existence and why they are here. The experiment was soon terminated, but the outcome was a greater awareness and expanding consciousness of our multiverse and its inhabitants. After this experiment, they choose to work covertly, behind the scenes. This unhappy planet Earth is today in a very critical condition. Our survival as a kingdom in nature is still at stake. Whether the forces of destruction or construction will win this battle is an open question. American contactee Daniel Fry was in a very straightforward manner told of our choice: there is nothing that is intrinsically wrong with your material science. It will progress and expand to horizons as yet undreamed of, if only your people will provide a spiritual foundation capable of supporting it. And if they do not? I asked. Survive will have neither the ability nor the desire to rebuild their science. Your race and your culture, however, are not doomed to extinction. They may continue upon their upward course until they have left this danger behind them forever. The choice, you see, is yours. There is little doubt, I said, which choice the people would make if they had sufficient understanding and they were aware of the constructive and destructive alternatives between which they should choose. Precisely, Alan replied. That is why we are here, and that is why you are here. Secret of the Ages. Knowledgeable and experienced ufologists will recognize the theme of this blog entry as the title of book written by British ufologist Brinsley Lapoa Trench, 1911-1995, published in 1974, Secret of the Ages, UFOs from Inside the Earth. Coming from one of the mainstream ufologists of the 1960s and 70s, this was of course a very controversial book. The idea for this work may have been inspired by esotericist Malan Cook, married to Brinsley Lapoa Trench 1961-1969.